Blog Talk Radio.
Priestess and the Cauldron, a podcast featuring Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, two out-of-the-broom-closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC Radio Network. During each show, Elvira and Phoenix will help you create rituals, make spells, make potions, much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long ago cultures and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Phoenix, take it away.
Here we go.
I know, it's like, take it away. All I keep hearing is, you know, take it on the road. It's like,
well, that's kind of happening.
I know, it is. We kind of are doing it all over the place, and you're in one place, I'm in another. So this is another one of our fabulous pre-records coming to you from the future.
That's right.
Actually, and it's a part two of one that we did a couple of weeks ago. I think it'll be officially two or three weeks from now. It's about bottle cells and containers.
Right.
Hard spells, not, you know, the softer one.
Right.
And all their wonderful things. So as we do, we're going to, obviously, we can't say what happened this week, but what is going on in your life, Phoenix? What is
well,
happening?
I hinted to this with you before the radio show started, but I've been teaching a 6-week class and it just ended this week. And it's a challenging, it's called the Iron Pentacle. It's a reclaiming class, and it's also related to the Anderson Fairy tradition. But one of the important lessons that I've learned in stepping into teaching is when you teach a class, you're also doing the work. It's not like you get away from doing the work when you are a teacher. You're still doing the thing. And Iron Pentacle is a lot of shadow stuff and looking at where you may be out of balance or looking at where you're not right size and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, for the last 6 weeks, a lot of this stuff has been coming up for me, and I've been having some health issues that have not just started in the last 6 weeks, but have been actually happening for several years, and it's just started to ramp up this last year. So I'm actually, you know, taking action and looking at that and trying to do something about it rather than just going, wow, these health issues are annoying. And Elvira and I, we had a conversation the other day, and you mentioned something about how busy my schedule is and how hectic my schedule is. And of course, you know, the symptoms I'm manifesting are going to be manifesting. And I'd thought that already, like that wasn't a new thing. But I've actually, this year, I've attempted to cut back a lot on my obligations. And I have cut back a lot on my obligations, and yet I am still ridiculously busy and a little bit overbooked. And I don't know, hearing those words come out of your mouth and that moment with, you know, all of the other things going on, it was like the perfect storm, and it just sort of hit me in a very different way than it had before. Like, oh, right. Like I don't make enough space to slow down. I don't make enough space to be quiet. I don't make enough space to do nothing. And how unhealthy that is. And even the moments where I am slowing down, you know, like I'm going on vacation. Elvira and I have talked a lot about our summer plans. I'm going on vacation with my daughter. I haven't been on a real vacation in many years because my vacations are spiritual retreats where I might actually be holding a leadership role. So I'm still working. And a spiritual retreat can be a vacation, but it's not really. You're doing hard work. You're doing self-reflection. You're practicing spiritual concepts. That's not complete release from life. And maybe that is not true for everyone, but my life, my entire life is my spiritual path. Like that, my work, my job, the way I get paid, all of those things are related to my spiritual path. So going to a spiritual retreat is actually work. Like, you know, I need to go to Disneyland and do nothing for 3 days but ride roller coasters, you know? So I wanted to thank you, Elvira, for saying the obvious thing to me, because it peels back a layer of onion, and I feel like I've had this shift in perspective this week. So thank you for your wisdom and counsel. I shared that with my class too, like, okay, everybody, Elvira does readings, and she does readings here at Milk and Honey, and she's amazing, and she transformed my life this week. Come and see Elvira.
Well, now you're shifting all the excitement and energy and things. Thank you. I will hope to, to rise to the occasion. People will say things to each other, and they cook. I had a very dear friend of mine, and she wasn't a friend when I first started my trek after my husband died. She had been someone I knew because she was a client of my husband's, and I got to know her a little socially. But she, when she pointed things out, they were blunt. They were like, you know, just there. And more than one time, I would find myself coming back saying, you were right, after huffing off. Or my natural inclination when somebody says something to me is, you know, I'll try to listen to it, but it's like, how can you tell me that? I know what I'm focused here. But see, sometimes it is just that, somebody saying something to you, and then it being, as you say, the perfect storm with what was culminating. And you know, we all are. The things that I have found the hardest in my life is to sit and do nothing. I kid you not. I'm just as active and have been over the years like you, not in the same ways, but it was very difficult. When I went to start visiting my daughter, and of course I do things, you know, I keep up my because it's a flow of income. But there were times when, I mean, she was working and I was sitting there and I'm like, what do I fucking do with myself? You know, it's like, what is rest? You know, so I started doing things that I started with, like, okay, I'm taking myself out to lunch. And then it was, then I'm going to go find a place and be with it. And it was, those are the things you will need to do when you're in France and England. Rather than everything, because I know what a vacation is like when I've gone, like, I'm going to Hawaii, and so we do paragliding, and we do scuba diving, and we do, and, you know, the whole idea was, you know, to go sit on a beach and do nothing, and you're doing everything else. So,
yeah, exactly.
But spiritual retreats are difficult. I do understand that, especially, like, what you do, you teach, you're asked to teach, or you suddenly find yourself stepping into it for some other reason, and then you have to learn the word no. It's not no, I'm not going to keep the flow going, you know, but it's no, I need space for me now, you know, and
The thing that I've had to really step into is not just immediately saying yes. And I think that this is, you know, a universal thing that a lot of people might benefit from. But, you know, when I get asked to do something or present somewhere or whatever, my first inclination is, oh my gosh, yes, because I'm excited and I'm excited to have been invited. And I love doing projects. I love teaching. I love all the things. So my first inclination is yes. And I don't necessarily look at the calendar or look at what else I may have going on that month or look at, how is this going to feed me with everything else going on in my life? And I think slowing down and saying, you know what, this sounds exciting and amazing. Let me get back to you. I need to actually look if I can make this happen. And I've been having to do that. And that's been hard. But it's forced me to say no to some things that I probably would have just jumped on because it sounded so fun.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And it seems to be universal because my week, what has been happening is people have been doing exactly that. They've been asking for help. And, they'll ask for help 24/7 if given a chance because we all are going through things no matter what, and we want to help. But using that other word is learning boundaries, it's learning boundaries as opposed to stopping flow, stopping, because especially in our field, our world, to be open to the things to come and then to be aware of them and then to work with them. And, that's what we've been taught. That's the process of manifestation. And when we start saying no, we're closing down the source. Well, there is a fine line as to
it's discernment.
That. Yes. And we all learn it over and over again. So lucky you got a big epiphany. Just be aware that it never stops. It always will come in other shapes and sizes.
Absolutely.
It's when you learn to back away from things enough so you give yourself some time, I want to go sit in the garden and I look at those weeds and, maybe I'll pull them. No, I think I'll just sit here and look at everything pretty rather than getting out. I come home and I look out and, what I found is I give myself permission to do I have to know when to stop. I'm one of those like you that keeps going like the ever ready bunny, that just battery operated, keeps on going. So I come home and I'll notice that I've got weeds out. Well, the rain, of course, made it happen. So the front has some weeds. And I've been watching them for, week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. And finally the other day I went over and I got my little trowel and I dug them out. Now, I didn't go anywhere else. I just did exactly what I had, saw and felt that needed to be done and then came in. And I felt really accomplished. Not like I had misplaced my energy, but I think that was for me a big learning lesson because then I'd have gone, okay, let me look at the side, let me go in the back, And I just come off of work where, depending on what I'm doing, it also is active and engaging. And, the idea of sitting quietly is, what you want to do. Like, I want my dinner, I want to sit quietly, maybe I'll binge watch on something I really like. And that's, I think, a very big lesson for all of us. But in the spiritual field, I think it's incredibly important to learn.
Absolutely.
So I thank you for the compliment and the acknowledgement. And I'm sure that somewhere down the road, you'll be the one saying it to me when I'm doing something that you look at me and you're going, why don't you take it easy? Give some space. So on that, and for me, it's, I look at my time here and I go, okay, I get this going and I get that going. As I said, I vacuumed my house and I really did it thoroughly because I'm going to flea bomb it, which I do every 6 months, and it's that time. And the dogs get to go to the groomers and get all prettied and cleaned up and everything. So, and of course, I found side projects just like, oh, I need to do this. So I had to actually, I was very conscious to not get sidetracked so much, but to get certain things done that when you're moving it and you go, why haven't I taken care of this in 7 months? So it always comes around. But I'm glad that, I'm glad that this happens so you can go to France and England and enjoy with the mindset that's part of the whole process to refresh yourself.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly.
So there we are. And
we
could actually start talking about what our, well, I mean, this is part of
our
it.
Our topic.
We all, you know, our scheduled topic. But our, you know, topics also have things like, you know, be aware of how much you choose to put your energy out so you do avoid depleting yourself over and over again. You know, we all know we'll push for something like, you know, the push to get your daughter, you know, through her graduation time. That was important because it was a deadline. It had a certain thing. But then, you know, for me, it's like pushing to get ready to go to Arkansas and so getting all the things done, but not overdoing it. That's our big lesson for everyone, not overdoing it, no matter what. So bottle spell,
yeah.
What do we want to start, you know, bringing forth? What is a bottle spell?
Are you asking me?
Well, that was a good point. I don't know. I just threw it out there as one of those side notes since I was already babbling. But a bottle spell is a container that you put, and it doesn't require just a bottle. It can be any kinds of things, that you put herbs and different things in for a particular reason. And I'm going to let you take off
right
on a generic here for whatever you want to go on.
Yeah, well, so one of the most common, in my opinion, bottle spells that people may have actually heard of already is a witch bottle. And a witch bottle is used for protection. One of the ways that I was taught, and I've been taught how to make a witch bottle in two or three different traditions, one of them being hoodoo, although in hoodoo they don't call it a witch bottle. And then in two different witchcraft traditions, we've made witch bottles, and my teachers have not exactly explained where they learned it from besides their teachers. So I feel like the origins of this are pretty universal. And I've done a little research and digging, but, you know, you can't trust everything you read, so I'm not really certain. But they have been found in homes, old homes all over the world. They have been dug up on the East Coast from different plantations where slavery was a thing. So it's pretty universal. But the basic concept is you take a jar and you put all kinds of stuff in it to keep negativity away. So you fill it up with needles and nails and broken glass and shards of mirror in some cases. In some traditions, you would potentially urinate in the jar. I'm not a fan of that. I personally think that there are other ways to use your urine for protection that doesn't go into a witch jar. But the idea is the ammonia, you know, so you could use ammonia, but again, to me, this is dangerous. I think putting a potentially volatile substance in a sealed container and then burying it in your yard just feels dangerous to me. So, you know, proceed at your own risk. But you fill a jar with these items and then you bury it in your front yard, and it serves as a protection barrier, I often think about a porcupine. Like I've created my own little porcupine that just stays wrapped up in a little ball right here. And it traps any negativity, it stops any harm, it keeps anyone from messing with my space or the people within that space.
Right.
I feel like that's a really easy and good example of a witch bottle. But that could be also transferred into all other kinds of magical spells, really.
Mm-hmm. Of course. It's funny you talk about, and I have, witch bottle is one of those that is like, as a protection, learned pretty quickly, you know, when they start getting into spell work and things like that, you know, it's kind of like they just, you get it, it's part of it. And as I say, there's always good stories when you start talking about things, different stuff. My husband, my deceased husband, my last one, he truly believed he was, you know, his was the spirit of dog. He was born in the Chinese year of the dog. He took it literally. So when you're talking about protection, I mean, in other areas, the dogs mark their territory, and that would be how he would do it. And when I first got together with him, I kind of was a little bit like, why are you, you know, going outside? And, you know, of course, we all know there's a certain stance, certain way that men handle being in that space where they're doing their business. And I would occasionally, I'd look out and I'd see that, and I kind of never really thought much about it, except that I thought it was kind of strange. But then I put two and two together, and that was the circumstances. So when you use urine to mark your territory to, you know, in the old days I was taught when you go out camping and, you know, you did your thing, you would urinate around your play, your campground to mark, this is mine. But in a bottle, it's a container, and so it contains more. Urine has been an age-old one to utilize, and I'm sure that, you know, who knows what the bottles are when they pick it up finally and do it. But all of the sharp objects are part of it. You know, that is something that I also have done, actually, when I have moved into places. So to do that, and sometimes it's been under floorboards, at the door, at the entrance of your property, you know, it depends on different things as to where you, how you want to do the protection, and how you want to add it. But vinegar is also a very good substitute for pee, or urine. I mean, we're getting scientific about it. But I also have used that as a way to use it for protection spells. And specifically, we started with protection. There are a lot of other versions of what jar spells are used for, but protection is usually the first and foremost in our traditions of witchcraft, what we've done to safeguard our home, our families, our business, things like that. So, but as you have said, there are other spells that we have learned from other traditions as well. But there's sweetening spells, which is, of course, a lot of times is used for love. And then, you know, prosperity spells that we can, you know, put in jars. So do you want to jump off with something, you know, because I know one of the things both Phoenix and I obviously talk about is that we have learned and worked the hoodoo tradition. And, you know, honey jars are very standard, very common, very part of their tradition.
Yeah.
I never really, I knew we, you know, honey, molasses, you know, that kind of a substance. I never really thought of it as much as I do now, because I've had that focus for so long, especially being clients that want certain things. And, of course, that's one of the things we obviously, part of our little repertoire. So what do you think about honey spells and molasses, things like that?
Yeah, so I'm on several different Facebook groups for different magic and esoteric things, and you know, I find it really interesting, the reaction to honey jars. There's different feelings out there. I like honey jars. I think that they're very effective for doing spiritual work, especially spell work. I think that they are, they can be really smooth and easy. However, they can also be slow. So, you know, one of the things that I would say about doing a honey jar is I think it's really good for making a challenging relationship more clear, a little bit more smooth, a little bit more easy. So maybe I should back up. I'm realizing that I'm, like, talking about honey jars as if everyone's going to hear the word honey jar and go, oh yeah, I know what that means. But a honey jar, you know, you use a sweet ingredient like molasses or sugar or honey or syrup to sweeten a relationship. So that you could do this with a partner, a lover, a friend, a boss, or a judge in a court situation. But you do the honey jar spell to shift someone's feelings that they are sweeter to you, right? And it can give you the upper hand in a situation where you're dealing with the court system or a legal system or a professional situation, or it can bring a relationship back into a better flow, a better place. You know, I think that honey jars are really good. The downside to a honey jar is it honey moves slowly. If you pour honey from one container to another, it moves slowly. If you are using honey in a binding spell, right? People who do binding spells will often use something sticky like honey to stick things together. So it also can be used for quite the opposite, you know, where you make things stuck rather than make things smooth. But the idea is that it sweetens the situation. So if you want sweetening to happen really fast, if it needs to happen tomorrow, a honey jar may help, but it may be too late. You know, you need a honey jar that you can work with over time when you have some space to improve a situation. It's not always good for an emergency, in my opinion. And the other downside to honey, specifically some other sweeteners, you don't necessarily run into this issue, but honey will start to crystallize. And when it crystallizes, it's stuck. And you either need to heat that jar up to get it smooth again, or you need to look at a different way of doing the spell work because your honey's stuck.
Right. And it becomes rigid. So even the flow and the concept of what started it tends to be stuck. You're right.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's good. And, you know, that there are many ways to do honey jars. Obviously, you have the honey. The one thing that is pretty common is that you either get a picture of the person or you write down your request, your petition, and, you know, there's certain ways to do it. In the Hoodoo tradition, of course, you do it in a specific way, and most of us that have trained that way kind of made it a combination of what we normally have done and then this. It's kind of our own version. And then, you know, sometimes you put in, you know, some of their hair, their personal concerns. If it's a love situation, if it's a court situation, you know, it's kind of hard to put in concerns of judges and lawyers and people. But
right. But you can get a hold of their signature. If you have legal documents, if you've been served any type of subpoena or legal documents, there will be the name of the judge on that. And often there is a handwritten signature that you can cut out, if you're brave enough to do that, and put that in the honey jar.
Right. So there is that.
I've done quite a few of those myself.
See, there you go. We all, you know, we all kind of, we have our little thing. I'm, you know, with the last name Love, you kind of get a, you know, I'm stereotyped. but and then some herbs. Sometimes people, you know, like make a little packet where you kind of layer things, and you maybe two little mini lodestones or magnets. And, you know, if you're trying to bring something, you know, two people together, keep them together, or if you want to draw something to you, it's a single magnet or lodestone to draw. And you kind of then fold it all up. You fold it, you know, the whole purpose here is when you're in traditional, you fold it towards you if you want it to come towards you. And I usually tell people, you know, once they fold it, is to get thread appropriate to whatever you're doing and tie the thread so you tie it together, because it will tend to open up. I mean, it's only got the pressure of whatever your hands are. And then you push it in the honey and, you know, technically you're supposed to, you know, and this is only for people that are not diabetic. You know, you're supposed to have some of that honey that when you push your finger in it, you lick it, ingest it to take it into your body. And that's very hoodoo. Tend to be, again, a combination. So I use a lot of sugar, mostly when it's very quick. And it is in the container spell, but, you know, I tend to use sugar because it's something you can, if it's in a bottle and you've got your petition or your things and you shake it, it's quick. It sweetens things quickly. You know, you want it to come to you as opposed to the syrupy ones. But we should address what to do if when something happens and you're done, what do you do to dispose of the bottle spell? So we've already done media protection,
right?
And then of course we have the honey, the sweetening spell. So how do we get rid of them? You know, people go, I'll throw them in the trash, and I'm going, no, don't. You know, because go ahead.
Okay, for a minute there in my past, I had probably a dozen honey jars going at once for clients, because that was kind of like, I don't know, there was a minute where that was my thing. Magical work, when you're a professional witch, I suppose, goes in cycles, and sometimes you're doing more of this kind of spell work and or that kind of spell work or whatever. And I just notice things happen in bunches. So I often have, you know, oh, I have a bunch of love candles burning right now. Or, oh, look at all these honey jars people have asked me to do. Or, oh, wow, I just made a dozen mojos. How weird. But for a minute there, I had quite a few honey jars going. And the way that I work is I make a honey jar. I charge to create the honey jar. I burn candles on top of the honey jar for a full lunar cycle for a month. And then at the end of the month, we touch base and see, how did it go? Are you noticing shifts? Do you want to keep going with this working? Yes or no? And if yes, then obviously we go for another month. If no, then I give them a 30-day window before I dispose of the honey jar. So I say, okay, you don't want to continue the working. I will keep this honey jar on my altar. And then at the end of 30 days, unless I hear from you, I'm going to release this working. Or on the other side, I also offer to send the honey jar to the client if they want to continue to work it. So after the 30-day window, people haven't responded to me, then I go to the crossroads and I dump out that honey jar. I pour it. There's a ravine behind my house where I go, I open the jars, I release them, and then I bring the jars home and I clean them, I scrub them out, I dishwasher them, and I clean them with Florida water after they've been run through the dishwasher. So I do a full-on cleanse of that container. The one thing that I don't tend to use non-organic ingredients in anything that I do, just because I'm eco-conscious. But occasionally I've added like a little plastic baby into a honey jar or some other thing. I don't leave those in the ravine. But anything that is organic material, I leave in the crossroads where this ravine is. And that is what I suggest to people when they are done with their honey jar. I suggest that they disperse the container at a crossroads and either throw the glass away or clean it really good. But I think I might be a little bit of a heretic in that regard. What do you do with them, Elvira?
Well, most of the time I don't do honey jars for clients. I'm kind of a little bit, I work a little differently. When I get clients that want honey jars, I will counsel them and teach them how to put it together, and I have them do it. If it is work that finally ends and they've chosen to not do this anymore, I also give them pretty much what you said, you know, to take the jar and go to an area, wooded area, an area where it's nature, maybe not a crossroads, but a nature. And I tell them to open it up and empty it, and anything that is organic leaves, and any of the little packet that they put together, to take it, open it up, and, you know, basically take the papers and things. And then they can throw the papers in a trash can, but basically it's breaking apart everything. And then, you know, the jar for them, I would say, you know, dispose of it in a trash can in an appropriate way in terms of that because of the circumstances. And that's for, you know, even if you're looking at a protection bottle, when you leave the area that you're leaving, the same thing is true. You empty it. But the fact that you put nails and pins and stuff like that, I would say that's a trash can, you know, process to take that out. But it's to break apart the spell. You don't just put the whole thing in. And I've had a couple of people who have, and I'm like, no, because what you've done is you kept the spell alive. Even though it is
right.
work, it's still alive. So, I mean, even if it's sort of on a coma, like a coma, it's still there. It hasn't, you know, which is, you know, if you, especially with things that are love, keeps people kind of pining away underneath everything. And you're like, no, you don't, you want to avoid that. If you're done working it, open it up, break it apart. But
yeah.
like you, I'm very adamant, like, take the honey and take the things that are, you know, of nature and return it. And then if you choose to use the jar again, then do exactly what you suggested, which is, you know, scrub it out completely and thoroughly and, you know, do all of that. Most of my clients tend to take the container and throw it in a trash can, appropriate trash can. So, but that would be, you know, one of the biggest things about spells. And, you know, you can do, even with protection, you can do the same thing as a quick protection. You put salt in a container and you do the same thing with the as an ingredient as opposed to ammonia or urine or, you know, something, you know, of that nature, vinegar. There is one thing we need to do, and I suspect we should take a break. I'm looking at our time for our fabulous commercial, and then we'll be back. But we need to talk about vinegar bottles and jars and containers for negative work, because that is part of it.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about shaking as well. I think that's important.
Yes.
So we'll get to that after our break.
Yes.
We'll be right back.
Back in a moment.
Magic is coming your way right after these messages. The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ollie, Sundays 3 to 4:30, the Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, Tuesdays 5 to 6, Blue Flag Root Radio with Lady Muse, Fridays 4 to 5, and The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Phoenix LeFay, Fridays 6 to 7. All times Pacific, add 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at LuckyMojo.com.
And we're back.
Yes, we are. That was refreshingly quick for at least a sip of water to keep from sounding gravelly. Okay, so you were going to talk about shaking. We're talking shaking jars, not anything else.
Yeah, so one of the things with container spells, and this can work for any type of spell work, protection, love, cursing, whatever, you name it, you can shake up the jar. Now, I wouldn't suggest doing this with a witch bottle because you bury that, right? And it's full of sharp things. You don't want to shake it and break the jar. But if you notice you're not getting movement, if you notice the thing isn't happening, if you notice that the energy around your spell feels a little flat, then you can shake the jar. The thing is, when you shake up the jar, you want to be clear of what your intention is. If you're doing if you're shaking for love or money or anything that's sort of a positive calling in, you want to really be feeling that. Like, I am shaking this jar, and as I shake, like, I feel the coins of heaven falling in my lap. I'm shaking this jar, and I can feel dollar bills flying into my pocketbook, or shit, $100 bills flying into my pocketbook. You want to focus on the goal. You want to pray. You want to chant. You want to sing. You want to add your energy. The whole purpose of the shaking is to raise energy around the spell that you're doing. If it's a curse that you're doing or some sort of negative working, you want to focus your anger or the negative energy that you're feeling. If you're banishing something, you're sending something away, or, you know, well, whatever, I'll refrain from going into too much detail there, but you want to send the negative energy, the anger, the frustration, whatever, into the shaking process. And again, you want to state your intention and say your prayer and chant and sing or whatever, but it's a much different energetic focus. So I think shaking is an important part of jar spells, especially if it's not manifesting as quick as you want.
Right. And I would think, you know, by shaking it or, you know, engaging in that energy movement, you also keep it from the honeys from crystallizing, because it's movement. You're continuing to create some kind of movement. And, you know, like anything, when there is no movement, it becomes stuck. So, you know, that's the sidebar that I was just, when you were talking, I was going, oh, well, that would also possibly help with the honey jar crystallizing. But now we're going to jump into the one part. You and I both, I don't practice it. I don't work with clients in this way, but it doesn't mean I don't know how to do it, are the negative aspects. And specifically in bottle spells, you know, the vinegar is a very common use of vinegar jars and vinegar spells to do breakup or some kind of negative work that you want. So, and again, you would add ingredients that would be pointy and sharp, very much like a protection spell bottle, but with a different purpose in mind, creating people to fight and be hostile to each other and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
Do you have any? I'm going to gloss, you know, and when I say gloss over it, we will be doing a show later in the year about cursing and crossing and things of that nature.
Yeah.
It is something that is part of it. We may not personally spend a lot of time in our practices or our work, but it is something of knowledge, and we would do it. So I would tend to say we'll do a lot more of that on that show than we are here with doing this kind of thing. What do you have to add?
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing with cursing is that before you can talk about any type of cursing spell work or the details of what to do, is to understand what your own personal ethics and code of conduct is. You know, there are definitely some traditions that frown upon cursing work. There are some traditions of witchcraft where you take an oath basically to say, I won't do any negative or cursing work. But it is very fuzzy, the line. What does cursing mean? One of the traditional spells in hoodoo is hot foot. It's to send someone away. Now, you can send someone away with all of the best intentions, and that they, you know, if you hate a coworker and you don't want to curse them, but you want them to get a different job in a different department, you could do a hot foot spell to send them away and have really great response from that. But some people would consider that curse, because you're putting your will over someone else's will, right? So you have to understand what your ethics are before you go down the road of cursing, and where your personal line is. And it's, in my opinion, important to really understand that before you take on doing that kind of work. And the reason that I say that is because when you get triggered, when you find yourself in a really challenging situation, when your kid's being bullied at school, when your spouse has an affair, when your boss demotes you for bullshit reasons, when you get into a really hostile argument with someone, all of these things can trigger you, and all of a sudden you're willing to throw some black magic at someone. I've been there. Still, like a year ago, someone in traffic was being just disgustingly hostile in traffic, and I pulled up next to them, and he flipped me the bird, and I was like, wow, you are being extremely hostile. And then he sat on my car, and I snapped. I freaking snapped. I lost it. And I was like, oh, you messed with the wrong person. You just gave me your personal effects, you dumb MF-er. I was so mad. I actually pulled over, got out of my car, used a tissue to collect his spit, and was prepared to go home and curse the heck out of this guy. And thankfully, I was picking up my kid from school. She talked me down. And by the time I came home, I did actually end up doing spell work on the situation, but it wasn't so that he would die in a fiery car crash, which is where I was when he first spat on me, you know? So you have to really understand what your motivations are and what your triggers are, because when you get pushed is when you will push back. And after the fact, after you've done the curse, if that's not your normal proclivity, you might be like, oh, yikes, I shouldn't have done that. You know, so, but bottle spells are great for doing cursing work, because you can fill it, you fill the bottle with all sorts of gross things, and then you store them in your bathroom right by the toilet tank, so that every time you flush, the energy of that, of human waste going through the tubes is impacting that, that jar. It's being hit with it every time someone uses the bathroom in your house. It's not pretty.
No, it isn't. You could always find a pretty box or something to put them in and stick them there, like
right?
Decorative. Yeah, get creative.
Right. And I think that there are times, you know, if you know that there is an abuser who's still actively abusing, if there's a serial killer in your neighborhood, if there's someone who's harming animals in your neighborhood, like, that, you know, I'm not against doing the right kind of magic in the right kind of situation. I'm not necessarily opposed to cursing, but I think it needs to be thought out very cautiously and carefully. And we'll talk more about all of this on the episode dedicated to it. But jar spells are a really good way of doing that kind of work, because it is contained. And you can focus all of your negative energy, all of your negative thoughts, all of your anger on that jar. And then it kind of works for itself. When you put it right by the toilet, it works for itself.
Mm-hmm. That's very brilliant, very brilliant. I would not necessarily automatically have thought of that, but I'm impressed. One of the things I did want to say, and it's not off topic as far as what vinegar and, you know, cursing and things, but I will definitely reiterate from Phoenix, you really need to be, you need to have that moment of silence to reset yourself, to determine that, because people do this kind of work and the spell work. I had a lady who was so upset, and she wanted this man, and she wanted to break this thing up. She went and she shook that bottle, and it broke, and it went all over her. You know, meaning the liquid went all over her.
Yeah.
And you have to, you know, so when you shake it, it can't be, you have to tone it down, number one. Number two, you really do need to be aware and centered about what it is you're actually doing it for. And sometimes we do things, and again, this will be back on another show, for reasons that I would have to say, no matter how justified you feel at that very, very moment, that it ultimately, when things kind of, you step back a bit, things happen, time happens, you go, why did I do that? You know, that was stupid.
Right.
So,
right.
But containers, I have found a unique way to recycle things. And I know this is kind of strange. I don't do this, you know, I do a lot of things where it's a one-time shot. But I have been collecting over the years different little things that come in jars. For instance, I have little containers that are jars that cream has come in, you know, face cream and things like that, and I wash it out and clean it out and scour it out, and I will take and remove the writing on it, you know, things of that nature, and basically use that. So it's kind of like a recycle of things that I have had, and I utilize them rather than, you know, just going out and getting, you know, another jar. Obviously, some
right.
things do, but these, and it's fascinating because I started that a long time ago, and I never even thought why I was going to do this, and I had this whole container of all these little jars, and you know they're portable too, so you don't have to spend a lot of time
mm-hmm.
and put in a bunch of stuff into a nice jar, but they're portable, so if there's something you want to take with you, it doesn't look obvious, it, you know, so it's something that you can think of in terms of how to recycle, repurpose some of the things that you do have, and will basically, you know, kind of help our environment as well. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so, but that, you know, container spells are a myriad things. You know, you can, you know, some people actually decorate and make things even prettier if they're, you know, things that they want for a positive nature. And so there's a lot of things you can add to the exterior or, you know, sometimes paint. I know that Lucky Mojo actually does have certain little containers, bottles that have all kinds of pretty
mm-hmm.
little things on it that you can utilize in a picture inside
yeah.
and stuff. So it has a wide range of how far you want to engage in putting your energies, your creativity in over and above the magical side.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and I think that's important. I think, you know, I do that with candles as well, is decorating the container. You know, especially if you're an artistic person or the aesthetics of something is important to you, taking your time to decorate the outside of the container just adds another layer of correspondence. If you're doing love work and you paint a jar red and you draw hearts all over it and you incorporate symbols, you know, your astrological symbol and your partner's astrological symbol or whatever, or if you're really gifted and you can draw like an image of the two of you together, or even gluing a photograph, you know, any way that you can incorporate more of a personal touch is good.
Mm-hmm.
And it also puts more of your energy into the process.
Right. These are all, and, you know, people do them and then they say, well, you know, I'll hide them. And yes, but everyone, you know, when you work them, they need to come out. So places where you can put them to look at them, if they're in a place like your money corner of your room or your house or something, and you have that, you decorate it. Love things,
right.
You know, a lot of times people, I will say this, and I remember actually Miss Kat saying is that people do honey jars even when they're married for years and years and years to keep their relationship strong and sweet and, you know, joined. And that would be something you keep out where the two of you engage in that process. So it's a positive. It's not just I want so-and-so and I want him to or her to love me and I'm going to make this honey spell and blah, 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 blah. But a lot of times it's about keeping the relationship sweet and in creating that connectedness between the two of you, even if your partner may not be all that, you know, like, I'm not into magic, you know, but it's the idea.
Mm-hmm.
Just like you have something special that you put out that you both look at as something that's your special thing. It could be, you know, any number of items that, you know, you found this in an antique store, you know, when you were on your honeymoon and you just love it and you sit it in, you know, a particular place in your house. Well, the same thing is true with these kinds of things as far as positive things. The negative things, you definitely put those in an area where people, like Phoenix was saying, behind the toilet, somewhere where people aren't going to see it, you know, in terms of
right.
that kind of thing. So,
yeah,
but very, very intriguing and creative. Again, I think the part that I like about things of this nature is that they're creative. You can, you know, as you
yeah.
say, decorate the outside. We can do the kinds of herbs. I mean, and the correspondences for those things are, as we said before in other shows, you know, tables of correspondences are very popular and very good to have, you know, with you in some way, whether it's printed or on your tablet or on your computer or, you know, in your phone, that kind of thing, that you can refer to.
Right. So. Yeah, absolutely.
So.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Do we have any final thoughts? Because we've just sort of buzzed through this show really quickly.
Yeah, I think we're right about at time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I know that in light of where this is, I remember sitting with you on phone and talking about our pre-records and our things, and it will come up in the, in our list of shows. I just don't know where, but it'll be while we're
right.
both gone. So
yeah, but there's lots of fun things coming, and at the beginning of September, we'll
yeah.
be doing an Ask a Witch episode. So you have time to start thinking if there's a topic you want to hear us banter about. If you've got a question, you know, go to our website, witchpriestesscauldron.com, and send us a note with your question and your name, and we will see if we can get that answered on the show. Not all questions get answered, but we definitely do our best. So send them in.
Yes, definitely, definitely. And I believe the next show actually that we'll be on for this week, well, the week that we're pre-recording, is going to be for the summer solstice and be coming up. And then we have, I think, technically one more live show before all of our pre-records will be hit on
right.
the rate.
But, yep.
Our adventure for the summer almost is here to begin.
That's right. The fun is coming.
Yes, definitely. Well, my dear, I think we can bid our audience adieu or two. And
yes.
We will see you all on the radio in pre-records for several weeks. But then in September, as Phoenix said, we will be live with Ask a Witch. So bring
That's right.
your... questions out there, and we'll see what we can do.
Yep. And happy summer solstice.
And happy summer solstice. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, The Priestess, and The Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Our podcast airs live every Friday at 6 p.m. Pacific and will be available for download. Questions or comments on this show or ideas for upcoming shows can be sent to our website, and that's at www.witchpriestesscauldron.com. Again, that's witchpriestesscauldron.com. On behalf of Elvira, Phoenix, Alan, and myself, Gwion Raven, a big merry meet and merry part and merry meet again. Blessed be.